Chapter 8. Final Reflections. During his last winter at Koltushi, Pavlov grappled with the lessons of his climactic year in two manuscripts, so different in language and genre, one a scientific paper on psychology as a science, the other a letter to communist leader Vyacheslav Molotov about Bolshevism, science, and religion. Each was a final expression of the same long quest. Pavlov devoted that scientific paper to the physiology of associations. Associationism's success in connecting subjective phenomena, such as words, thoughts, and feelings, with measurable objective actions, represented the most important achievement of psychology as a science. That achievement was now threatened by Gestalt, which appealed to the animistic belief in a special substance separating mind from the rest of nature. Gestaltist interpretations mystified phenomena that were scientifically explicable through his own research on the objective phenomenon that corresponds to the psychologist's association. An audience expecting that phenomenon to be the conditional reflex was in for a surprise. Pavlov now invoked and reinterpreted experiments with dogs that he had initiated with his turn to systematicity. These adopted a design that he had avoided when preoccupied earlier with chains of reflexes, but which had been developed by other researchers schooled in his methods. In the mid-1920s, two of Pavlov's disciples interested in psychiatry and child development, Krasnogorsky and Ivanov Smolensky, had demonstrated that humans routinely formed connections, associations, between two cortical points, that is, between two indifferent stimuli, even if they were not reinforced by a subcortical exciter. For example, when a child was exposed simultaneously to a light, a buzzer, and a metronome, and the light was then established as a conditional stimulus for food, the buzzer and metronome also elicited a food response. This was the same type of non-CR association that Pavlov had later observed in experiments with Rosa and Raphael. From October 1932 through early 1934, Pavlov's co-workers, I.O. Narbutovich and N.A. Podkopaev, conducted similar experiments, using movement rather than salivary reflexes, with the same result. By simultaneously exposing a dog to a rotating figure and a tone, they established an association between the two. Then, they established the rotating figure as a conditional stimulus for electrical shock. Now, the tone alone, too, elicited this same defensive reaction. Pavlov had earlier interpreted all these connections as CRs, but now, in psychology as a science, he distinguished between the specific CR and the general association. The CR between rotating figure and shock had been joined to the association between figure and tone in a mosaical association of associations. This new metaphorical perspective explained his decades-long failure to establish experimentally a second and third order CR that, as the equivalent of the psychologist's associations, combined end-to-end in long chains to produce complex behaviors, thoughts, emotions, and knowledge. The lab had first attempted in 1905 to form a second-order CR by establishing, say, light as a signal for food and then a buzzer as a signal for the light. The buzzer did not, as they excitedly expected, elicit salivation. "We were grief-stricken," Pavlov later recalled. He had concluded reluctantly that, rather than forming a second-order conditional stimulus, the buzzer had become a conditional inhibitor. He returned to this problem repeatedly in subsequent decades, but remained unable to form chained reflexes analogous to our associations. Now, finally, he could explain that troubling mystery. The physiological dimension of the psychologist's linked associations was not a chain of CRs, but rather a set of CR and non-CR associations that formed independently and became linked in the cortical mosaic. In Psychology as a Science, Pavlov explained the physiological differences between these two types of association. The CR involved in the linkage of a subcortical point, excited by unconditional drives for food, safety, and sex, and a cortical point that was excited simultaneously by an external exciter. In a non-CR association, certain kinesthetic, tactile, and visual excitations from certain external objects and their position become connected with other, also visual excitations, and perhaps also with kinesthetic excitations from one or another external objects. These were linkages between two cortical points. Another difference followed from this. The formation of any association required cortical tonus, energy, excitability. In the CR, that tonus was provided by the involvement of the subcortex, by the energy of the primal drives. Since non-CR associations did not involve the subcortex, they required an alternate energy source, which Pavlov's lab supplied in experiments by using wavering stimuli to maintain an orientational reflex, the physiological dimension of curiosity. These two types of association produced fundamentally different kinds of knowledge. By forming a CR, the animal learned about the relationship of separate objects in the environment to itself. For example, that a buzzer signaled an opportunity to eat, and a rustling bush, the danger of a predator. Through non-CR associations, organisms learned about the relationship of external things among themselves. The chimp stacking boxes learned that a particular visual image of the boxes corresponded to a stable structure. Non-CR associations, then, represented the embryo of science. Narrowing the centrality and scope of the CR, he had expanded dramatically that of Pavlovian method and explanation. He was already preparing his lab to study systematicity and all associations, and associations of associations, in the same manner he had analyzed CRs, and thus to expand his research into new areas of psychology such as the perception of musical sounds and melodies, of form and relationship. At age 86, Pavlov remained both true to a lifetime's mental habits and remarkably open to changing his mind. Science, Christianity, and Bolshevism. Pavlov also labored that winter over his principled and lengthy critique of official atheism for Molotov, but was dissatisfied with it and decided instead to write a letter. He never completed that either. These drafts remained in his personal papers. He began on a positive note. "I must admit that the longer your regime exists, the further it departs from the extremes from which it began, making room for actual reality instead of theoretical constructions. The depersonalization of the human being in the extreme form of communism and a despotic dictatorship is giving way subtly to a gradual recognition of the rights of the individual. As evident in the reference to the Bolsheviks' improving grasp of actual reality, his optimistic interpretation of contradictory indications reflected Pavlov's faith in the civilizing influence of science. Yet, they continued their barbaric persecution of religion. Freedom of belief, like freedom of scientific inquiry, Pavlov insisted, was a basic human right, a matter of individual conscience. Furthermore, religion played a positive cultural role by relieving the most painful dimension of life, the lack of control over one's fate in the face of the uncontrollable and unexpected, случайnost. Dismissing the view that religion originated in deception by self-interested exploiters, he attributed it rather to a purposeful, reflexive, adaptive response by naive man to the dawn of self-consciousness and man's juxtaposition of himself to nature. Religion was rooted in a fundamental psychological need. Oppressed by the случайности of his natural and social milieu, man needed to believe in some law of nature, in some more or less constant connection between cause and effect, so he could assume some control over his own destiny and, depend in a human way upon his own activity. That need was filled by the concept of a God who held everything in his hands, and who, if well disposed toward you, did not permit any evil случайности. Rationalists, Pavlov continued, dismissed religion as a remnant of pre-rational thought, and believed that science, the fruit of human reason, would completely replace, eliminate religion. That had long been his own view, and had played an important part in his decision to leave seminary for science. Now, however, although he remained a rationalist to the marrow of my bones, he found it unconvincing. Here, his essay took a psychologically revealing turn, as he dwelled on the horrors of uncertainty and the uncontrollable in human life. As so often when he addressed broad issues, the autobiographical dimension of his thinking is palpable as he slips constantly between the first and third persons. What is the most difficult, really terrible thing in life? Случайности of birth, the inheritance of genes and social class, of environment, initial conditions, of death and illness, of every other misfortune and obstacle in life. A peaceful, fulfilling life required a regular, undisturbed course of life and certainty in it. But where can one obtain either? Rationalists replied that science provided an escape from случайности, and had succeeded in doing so in many realms. But, as Pavlov knew from experience, it remained almost powerless as an agent of certainty in any individual human life. However much I were to conduct myself consciously according to the rules of science, could I really be certain that some unexpected serious illness would not swoop down unexpectedly upon me with various consequences? Although I always walk on the pavements and am careful at all intersections that a truck will not strike me or a mass of concrete not break off. And my sense of peace is connected with the fate of my intimates, and all such serious случайности in their lives also shake my internal world. And the fate of my homeland? A mass of случайности not even considered by any science threaten it, to say nothing, of course, about dangers that are rationally foreseeable. Here, Pavlov voiced the preoccupation with certainty and control that had always resided at the heart of his life and his science, fusing his personal psychology and passions with his training in physiology and the scientific spirit of his age. And he was clearly reflecting on his own long life, the tragedies of war and revolution, the recent death of his son, a bolt from the blue for his wife, the случайност of illness for him, his constant distress about the repression of innocence and the death of my homeland. Perhaps he was also contemplating his mortality and the ultimate случайност of death. You dream about this and that, and suddenly you die. His uncharacteristically sober assessment of science's ability to conquer uncertainty seems also a tacit recognition that, for all his achievements over the past 3 decades, his own research had failed to confine the psyche within the comforting certainties of mechanistic law, and indeed seemed nowhere close to doing so. He still believed that science would finally succeed in understanding, limiting, and perhaps controlling the torments of human consciousness. But, as he had written 5 decades earlier when contemplating Dostoevsky and the prospects for a true science of the psyche, not soon, not soon. As it had since time immemorial, religion provided the comforting certainty of a kind, omniscient divinity, a necessary lightning rod against the uncertain and unexpected, not just, as he had thought previously, for weak types, but for the great majority of people. Granted that no God existed to protect the believer from the arbitrary power of unthinking and cruel случайност, which was governed by the implacable laws of nature, religious faith still cushioned the faithful against life's unexpected blows that might otherwise destroy one's energy and interest in life. Religion also contributed to certainty and control of one's destiny by establishing moral ideals of behavior. He was no doubt thinking of Serafima and her response to the recent loss of Zevalod, and perhaps was recalling the comfortable certainties of his years as a young believer. In order that an omnipotent god protect you from Sluchainosti, you must please him, aspire to resemble him, you must approach the ideal. And when you are afflicted by misfortune, this is either a test of your faith in God or a reminder that you are failing to fulfill his wishes, and so must pull yourself together. Religion thus replaced the unrestrained arbitrariness of external forces with an ideal of behavior. That moral ideal was personified by Jesus, the apex of humanity, who embodied the greatest of all human truths, the truth of the equality of all people, which provides the basis of the rights of the individual and a moral concept that divides all human history into two halves, the slavery era before Jesus and the era of cultural Christianity after Jesus. What objection could any exact science or any rational state have to the moral teachings of this Christianity? Indeed, here resided a promising commonality between Christianity and communism. Pavlov acknowledged the undeniable service of communism's moral core, its insistence on elimination of the distinction between the wealthy and the poor, based on the recognition that useful labor should entitle a person to respect and welfare in life. By its commitment to the greatest of all human truths, the truth of the equality of all people, communism shared considerable ground with Christian culture. This might have become a key subtheme of his essay, had he completed it. As his draft lost structure toward the end, it became a series of scattered comments and thoughts for further development. One of these read, "You are the successors to Jesus' mission. If not for the persecution of religion, there would be among you fervent and talented adherents from among the servants of the church." He had twice recently expressed that same sentiment. At a meeting with co-workers after Easter 1935, he commented that one need not celebrate Easter because Jesus Christ was a man and could not be resurrected. But one must necessarily celebrate Christmas. Jesus Christ was a great man. He was the first communist on earth. Some months later, he remarked that the results of the Bolshevik experiment were unclear, and he did not endorse their policies. But at the basis of Bolshevism lies the striving of the Russian spirit toward perfection, justice, good, toward a great humanity. Karl Marx created this system, but the Russian spirit recast it in its own way. Bolshevism is more multifaceted and complete than Christianity, but one must still await the results for decades, a half century at least. Pavlov had become neither a believing Christian nor a convert to communism, yet he was groping hopefully toward his own grand reconciliation. He had abandoned religion for science and scientism, but now science, perhaps, was producing a more realistic, civilized, and humane Bolshevism that might become a genuine Russian contribution to the great historical era inaugurated by Jesus. Time, he concluded, would tell.